Hello, welcome to the Miranda Writes Podcast.
I'm Crystal.
I'm Vanessa.
We have the right to remain silent.
But we probably won't. So how are you, Florecita?
All right.
You're all lathering up your lips over there.
I need chapstick.
I forgot to get the Vicks.
I know you did. I'm over here like, I guess I'll compromise.
Like, I guess I'll just find out what to do with my dry lips.
We're Vicks fanatics over here.
Yes.
We swear by Vicks.
I know.
We should get paid for advertising for Vicks.
We should. For real. Montreal, she does not have
here,
food.
Come here, Bonte. He wants to come up here, I think.
Yeah, he
come
thinks on. You have food.
Oh.
So,
How was your week?
Yeah, it was good. What did I do? I have, I'm very proud of myself. Oh, I have a proud moment
this week. I know.
So, I actually started this suggestion case.
It was a case suggestion made by Miss Audra.
Yes. And so I started it Sunday night after you did yours.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess I feel so accomplished because
you got it I'm done. Not,
yeah, like hair on fire. So this is a really good case suggestion.
Yes. Thanks, Audra.
And I'm just going to dive right into it. Well, how was your week first before I go on?
It was good. Really busy. Yeah, it was really busy. Okay. I'm getting comfortable in my little office over there.
Oh, good.
I need to get like a little chair so like people can, when they go in there, they have somewhere to sit.
So they can visitamos.
Yeah. Visitamos, yeah. And I want to get like a little table so they can, like, if they have coffee or something, they can put it right there.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go to the secondhand store and go look.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good idea. Maybe we should go tomorrow. Oh, yeah. You have your hair appointment tomorrow. Huh?
I do have my hair appointment.
And we have an appointment with Kim.
Yeah.
Dang it. Never mind. Do. Scratch that idea. Maybe we can go Friday.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. That would be a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While we're getting day wasted.
Yeah, for real. That's a good plan. I can't wait.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Anyways, that was it.
Okay, cool. So let's get started. Mm-hmm. So I titled this story, Stolen Freedom, The Fairbanks Four.
Ooh, I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that title. Aww.
Okay, so this is very sad.
I know. But I wanted to do it, but then you're like, I don't have anything. And I was like,
yeah. Okay. So this is Stolen Freedom.
Oh.
So it all began on the night of October 11th, 1997.
Mm-hmm.
A tragedy struck in Fairbanks, Alaska.
So here's how dumb I am.
Mm-hmm.
When she first told me, I thought it was in California.
Oh, okay.
Why? I don't know.
Nobody tell me.
No, I didn't even know it was an Alaska one until you said it. It was in Alaska, and I was like, yeah, Alaska?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's how dumb I am.
So I went to Alaska last year, right?
On the cruise.
Mm-hmm. On the cruise, and I was like, why does that town just sound so familiar?
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't go there. I guess it's more inland. And of course, we stayed like on the coast. So yeah, I've never been there. I just heard a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, tragedy struck on October 11th, 1997
mm-hmm.
in Fairbanks, Alaska. A young 15-year-old boy by the name of John Hartman was brutally beaten and left for dead.
Oh, man.
2 weeks prior to his assault, John had barely turned 15 years old.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Besides the people involved, there weren't any known witnesses that night to the assault.
Okay. There were no known witnesses.
No known witnesses besides the people that were involved in this beating.
Okay.
The perpetrators were the only witnesses. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So really quick,
mm-hmm.
You know how I was like obsessed and I'm so obsessed with SVU. Mm-hmm. Every time they would say perps, I was always like, are they saying perps or perks?
Oh.
It was perps.
Yeah. Perpetrated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, So the perps. So the perks were the only known witnesses to that assault.
Okay.
There was actually, I don't know if you would call her a witness because she didn't really see it. Okay.
Okay.
So I am going to call her a witness because I don't know what else to call her, but yeah. There was a female witness that was staying in a woman's abuse shelter next to the parking lot, next to this parking lot where the assault had taken place.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So was she outside or?
Uh-huh. A woman that lived in the woman's abuse shelter next door to the parking lot heard some type of altercation outside the,
yeah, I guess the her shelter. Room. Yeah,
her shelter room at 1:30 a.m.
Okay.
Oh, okay. She didn't see anything. She just heard it. Mm-hmm. She heard something going on outside.
Mm-hmm.
Which she did really good, and she reported to the shelter supervisor that night, you know, that she heard something going on. The shelter supervisor went outside and didn't see anything, so she decided it wasn't important enough to call the police.
What?
Yes, because she didn't see anything.
Yeah, but still, what? Mm-hmm.
So at approximately 3 a.m., John Hartman's unconscious body was found sprawled out over the pavement near the front of the woman's shelter.
Oh, shit.
Yes. And John was discovered by a driver passing through that busy street right there in front of the shelter in that parking lot. It was, I guess, a busy street.
Yeah.
Half of John's body was on the pavement and the other half of his body was on the curb.
Oh, shit.
The driver that found John said he knew the victim was still alive because he could see his breath in the cold air. So this happened in October.
Yeah, obviously. So it was like freezing over there.
So it's really cold.
I mean, I'm assuming. I've never been, but I'm assuming.
Yeah, it would be Alaska pretty would be chilly, yeah.
Pretty cold in October.
Yes. So John's face and head showed signs of severe trauma, as if he had been stomped and kicked on.
His head?
His head, his face.
Yeah.
Yep, everywhere. Mm-hmm. But mainly his face, yes. When John was found, his pants were down to his knees.
Was he sexually assaulted?
We'll get into that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say assaulted because he wasn't assaulted. Was he raped?
Right.
Uh-huh. I hate to say sexually assaulted.
Yes.
They were raped.
Right, exactly. So, on the night of the assault, John was wearing a pair of pants that were a few sizes way too big because he had actually borrowed a pair of pants from his friend.
Okay.
So, they were pretty big. So, it appeared that John was trying to run from his assailants, which made it hard for him to run and break away with such baggy pants. So, that was kind of like what they assumed. After about 30 hours on life support, John Hartman succumbed, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Succumbed to his injuries the afternoon of October 12th, 1997. Mm. He passed away. Mm-hmm. It was later determined that there were no signs of sexual assault and no weapons were used in the brutal beating. So it was just mainly, like, literally punching, kicking,
stomping. I was his age and 1997. I mean, I was barely born in 1997.
Hey, look at her. She's lying. She's all fossilized by now.
How old were you in 1997, Mohed? I think I was around his age.
I was in 13.
97. Oh, you were 13?
Yeah.
So I was so like 17? 16?
Yeah, 16. Yeah. Okay, so I want to point out that John Hartman, he was, you know, a victim as well in this case, you know.
Yeah.
He was, you know, the victim, and that's how kind of like this whole thing started, okay? Mm-hmm. So the investigation begins, right? Mm-hmm. So within 36 hours of the assault, police arrested and charged four young Native men in the murder of John Hartman. Okay. Their names are Marvin Roberts, Kevin Pease, George Freese, and Eugene Vent. Okay.
Were they all the same age as Mr. Hartman?
They were a little bit older.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to that.
Okay.
So basically, police beelined and immediately accused these four young Native guys of being a menace to society, driving around looking for trouble. And
why?
And ultimately beating John Hartman to a bloody pulse.
Pulse.
Pulp. I don't know if it's pulse or pulp. Pulp. Okay. Pulp? I just said pulse. I meant to ask, but...
I was like, wait, what?
Why would it be pulp? I just say pulse because, I mean, bloody pulse.
I have no idea.
But anyways, okay. Because I think pulp is like orange juice, right?
Please excuse us. We're dumbasses. But anyways, yeah. Go on.
Yeah. I'm just going to say bloody pulse because to me it sounds better. So all four young men were friends. They knew of each other.
Yeah.
They grew up together, went to school together, and also played basketball together. So yeah. They were like all around the same age, okay? Yeah. So let's get into the night of the assault.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a wedding reception being held at the Old Eagle Hall in downtown area of Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It has been said that all four young boys stopped at the wedding reception that night. However, all four boys had attended the wedding reception at different times throughout the night. They were not all together.
Okay.
They were
on their own time with different people at different times.
Yes.
They didn't show up together and leave together. It wasn't like that.
It wasn't like that
kind of party.
Exactly. Yeah. They just all went on their own time.
Yeah.
And also I want to point out that there was like 600 wedding guests that night. So, you know, they're native, Alaskan natives is what they call them.
Eskimos, right?
Yeah, Eskimos. Mm-hmm.
Somebody said I look like an Eskimo
before. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
They asked if I was an Eskimo and I was like, no.
They're
like, you look like an Eskimo. I'm like, how do Eskimos look?
Thank and you.
I'm like you. I was like,
oh.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, there was like 600 guests that night.
Mm-hmm.
And, they had a bunch of people going in and out. So anytime somebody got married, just like here, you know, or, you know, like the reservations here, everybody's related to everybody, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in Alaska, of course, they don't have roads. So people would like, I mean, they do have roads, but like a lot of people, they fly in, you know.
Yeah, because have you ever seen The Fourth Kind?
Yes, yes.
So she says in there, like, there's no roads. You have to fly in.
There's
like,
not. Like, if I were to meet somebody from Alaska and they would tell me that shit, I'd be like, you're lying. You're lying. You're lying. That makes no sense. How is there civilization there? But it's true. So you either, I guess, go by boat or a plane. If I had never gone, I would be like, they're full of shit. They're lying.
You're full of shit.
You're a cheater. You're a liar.
So, lying, cheating, hustler.
Yes, exactly. Those hustlers. But anyways, so a lot of people came in to this city to attend this wedding reception.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I wanted to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we're going to get into, I'm going to go into the Fairbanks four guys, okay?
Okay.
Those guys.
So
the first guy named, his name is Marvin Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin is one of the few people at the wedding reception that had a vehicle.
Okay.
Marvin was known to be a good, hardworking, law-abiding citizen.
Aww, okay. Poor Marvin.
Marvin graduated as a valedictorian in high school.
No shit.
No.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that natives can't because my kids are native. And
right.
I'm not saying that. I'm just like, that's so sad.
I know,
like,
right?
How do you go from a valedictorian to, like, being accused of murder?
Yes, exactly. Marvin didn't even have a criminal record at this point.
Well, it doesn't matter if he did or not. Like,
I know, but I was just like,
that
was on my notes. I'm just telling the story here.
Don't butcher me. Messenger. Yeah.
Hey, you know, these are facts right here.
I'm just stating facts.
Just strictly facts here, okay? But
never mind. I was gonna say something totally inappropriate. Never mind.
Say it. Let's hear
Shut
it.
Shut up, Crystal.
Okay.
I was gonna say, don't murder me.
Hey, boy. Okay,
wrong,
so
bad choice of words.
I know. So, Marvin purchased his car the good old-fashioned way by getting a Jeb, working hard and saving money. Aww. Marvin worked as a seasonal forest firefighter because I guess they got a lot of forest fires out there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because there's a lot of forest out there.
How? So Marvin was basically an unpaid Uber driver that gave a few friends rides that night.
Yeah.
Please keep in mind that several eyewitnesses attending the wedding came forward and confirmed that Marvin Roberts was at the wedding reception during the time of
the quote unquote beating.
Correct. The beating.
He was an Uber.
Yeah, he Uber was. He was an Uber.
A volunteer Uber.
Yes. A free Uber.
A free Uber. Es gratis. Es gratis. Yes, gratis. Es gratis.
So, the next guy, his name is Eugene Vent. So, Eugene and Kevin Pease, which is another one of the guys, began their night party hopping. Okay. They attended a party together and then split up after heading into town. Okay, so. Once the two split up, Eugene was a few blocks away from the wedding reception. Wedding reception. Wedding reception.
Wedding reception.
Yeah. Wedding reception.
So, Eugene was a couple of blocks. Blocks.
Box. I know. What the hell?
I don't know what the hell's going on with this today. So he was a few blocks from the wedding reception at what time?
It didn't give a time at that.
Oh, yeah. But he was.
But during the wedding reception, he was a couple of blocks away.
Okay. And Eugene was.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll get into times here in a little bit. But meanwhile, back at the ranch. Which is just a figure of speech.
Yeah. That means the wedding reception.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, an employee that worked at Alaskan Motor Inn Hotel contacted police several times reporting kids partying in one of the rooms and for disorderly conduct, basically. The hotel employee finally calls police and reports being assaulted and held at gunpoint from an armed assailant.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Eugene, when the police showed up, Eugene was seen on the hotel surveillance cameras. Todo borracho.
But that doesn't mean...
He was all drunk, staggering around.
But that doesn't mean that he was the one who held the gun to that guy's head, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So,
Well, I mean...
Yeah.
I was like making a statement but asking at the same time.
Yes. Exactly.
That's correct.
You are right. So yeah, we're gonna get into that.
Okay.
So just keep in mind as I'm going down the list of these guys, all of this stuff is happening.
My God, what is wrong with us?
What the hell?
I think it's that wine.
I don't know. Shit, I just had like a handful of cherries. But anyways, okay, so keep in mind that all these events are going on simultaneously.
As the beating.
As the beating. As the wedding reception, okay? So just keep that in mind. So, again, otra vez. Eugene was seen at the on the hotel surveillance cameras, todo borracho, which means all drunk and staggering around. The cameras also show Eugene getting into a cab and leaving the hotel.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But please keep in mind that the gun was not verified on the surveillance footage on Eugene or anywhere. Yes. Okay?
Yes.
So just keep that in mind.
Okay.
Pay attention. There's going to be a test.
Yep. Absolutely.
So shortly after that report, at approximately between 3 and 3:30 a.m., Eugene was stopped and arrested by police 5 blocks away from the Alaskan Motor Inn Hotel, which is where he had left in a cab. Okay, so that's 3 to 3:30 a.m. The hotel employee points out Eugene as the hotel assailant with the gun. Okay.
Question. When they arrested him, did they find a gun on him?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
So I think we're going to get to that. Just haven't got there yet.
Okay.
But they didn't. So Eugene was only 17 years old at this time. Okay. A couple of weeks shy from turning 18 years old.
Oh my God.
At the time of his arrest. The police had Eugene take a breathalyzer test. Mm-hmm. A breathalyzer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he blew twice the legal alcohol consumption limit.
Oh my God.
Okay.
So he was drunk.
Oh, he was lit like a Christmas tree, mija. So this gave police a great opportunity to arrest Eugene on a wide range of charges. I mean, for example, US, mm-hmm. underage consumption, public intoxication, disorderly conduct, assault with a deadly weapon, but they didn't find a weapon on him.
Well, they can't charge him with that then.
I know, but we're just being drama.
I know.
So another 4 or 5 blocks away, police were investigating the brutal beating of John Hartman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's Eugene's little background story. Okay. Let's move on to Kevin Pease.
Mm-hmm.
As if there isn't enough shit going on. Okay.
Jesus.
Uh-huh. At approximately 3 a.m. in the morning, a few blocks away from the crime scene,
mm-hmm.
Kevin's mother called police and reported Kevin for trashing her home, throwing plants and furniture around, and just being irate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Acting like a shithead.
Mm-hmm. Kevin has had a lot of previous run-ins with the law.
Okay. Kevin.
Mm-hmm. He had been picked up for armed robbery when he was a younger kid.
Armed robbery?
Mm-hmm.
Was he fucking 8?
Probably. Jeez. I don't know. It didn't give details. But during a previous arrest, he vandalized the inside of a police car. Like, kicked in all kinds of shit in the back. The cage and all of that. His dad had passed away about a year prior to this incident.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad died under violent circumstances. But it didn't go into detail. Okay. So I don't know exactly what happened there. Police did pick up Kevin the next day from the mom's house. However, Kevin originally denied having an alibi to the police the night before when all this was going on. Right.
He didn't have an alibi.
He denied having an alibi. Oh, he didn't say like where he actually was.
Yeah.
You know, or what had happened.
Yeah.
So that's Kevin's little background story. Let's move on to George Freese. The night of the reception, George is partying with a totally different group of people that night. Mm-hmm. Okay. The night before. George. See, every time I was talking into the thing, it was giving me Jorge. I don't know why, but his name's George.
So. I think your phone is just...
It wants me to speak Spanish.
I was gonna say it's being racist. It's just automatically assuming that we're Mexican, mm-hmm. even though we are. But
exactly. So George was living his best life, playing drinking games, just in complete puro pinche party mode, right?
Bet.
George was actually losing a drinking game at the party, and him and another friend decide to stumble off and leave the party because they were losing.
Yeah.
There were several eyewitnesses that stated George was totally white girl wasted and verified that he was falling down drunk. Like, that's how intoxicated he was. He probably wants to get down. Somewhere on the way back to the wedding reception, George hurts his foot.
Mm-hmm.
So George actually shows up to the hospital the next day complaining about a hurt foot. George claims that he might have gotten into a fight the night before, but couldn't remember due to being so white girl wasted.
Oh my God. That's the wrong thing to say. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, he didn't know that, but...
Right.
And then... Then they're saying that kid was stomped.
Mm-hmm.
So then he hurt his foot.
You're on to something. Keep that in mind.
Okay.
So pay attention. There's going to be a test. At this point, police jump on the opportunity and begin filling in the blanks of George's story. Okay. By Sunday night, all four young men are in police custody. Okay.
Oh, God.
So let's move on to the confessions.
Okay.
So we're going to start off with Eugene's confession. Because Eugene is the one, remember, that was a supposed hotel assailant.
Yes, yeah.
This, mm-hmm. that, and the third. Okay.
I think he wants to get up.
Yeah. So, oh, shut up, Voodoo. So, FYI, Eugene is only 17 mm-hmm. years old at this time of his interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's actually a few weeks shy from turning 18, which I already said that earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But after several agonizing hours, according to police, George and Eugene give full confessions. Okay.
Wait, okay. So, real quick. Eugene mm-hmm. was underage. Where was his mom? Exactly. Where were his parents?
Exactly.
Why weren't his parents contacted?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Keep that in mind.
Okay.
So, Eugene's initial statement, he said that he had blacked out and then he couldn't remember anything. The next thing he remembers is being arrested by police. Okay.
Okay. That, well, yeah, because he was like, he's the one that blew the about 2 times above the legal limit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. One of the officers tells Eugene, you can't say that you don't remember because that's not good enough.
What the fuck does that mean?
Scolding him as if he is scolding his 3-year-old child, right? This is all during interrogation.
Mm-hmm.
After 12 hours of interrogation, the investigators are able to break down Eugene, and he finally says, okay, well, maybe. Right? Because he can't remember shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So during Eugene's interrogation, he stated, maybe I did hit him, but then immediately says, no, I didn't. I would have remembered that. You're trying to put stuff in my head.
Yeah.
And then... During this suspicious full confession, the detective asked Eugene to go into detail about what exactly happened, and then the tape runs out.
What? Conveniently.
Yes.
Fucking conveniently.
That's funny because that's what I said on the next line. Conveniently. Then detectives provide a handwritten sketch of Eugene supposedly placing himself at the scene of the crime.
A handwritten sketch?
Yeah, like a drawing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What?
And in the detective's handwriting, scribbled on the paper, it says per vent, meaning per Eugene vent.
Yeah.
Like pointing to a place on the sketch, mm-hmm. right? So during the interrogation, several officers are bursting in and out of the interrogation room, name dropping and turning the guys against each other. Because by this point,
yeah, they have all four in custody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they're probably telling them, well, this guy said he saw you at this time mm-hmm. with this person. Like, what the fuck? Oh, my mm-hmm. God. I'm already getting mad.
Yep. So at one point, one of the officers tells Eugene, they know Eugene was present at the crime scene because of the blood on his shoe. Detectives told Eugene, don't try to deny or wipe the blood off because we already saw it.
Was there blood on his shoe?
Nope. After 16 times of denying that he was not at the scene of the crime, Eugene finally says, well, if there's blood on my shoe, then I guess I was there. Right?
Well, yeah, because he just wants to go home. Yeah.
Yep.
Like, he's just fucking tired, and he's mm-hmm. 17.
Well, and he
on
had
top of that,
literally been up all night.
Yeah, and he was drinking.
Yeah,
so he wants, intoxicated. Yeah, he's, like, fucking tired because it's puro pinche party.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
So, at some point during the investigation, the detectives bring in a yearbook and ask Eugene to point out who his friends are out of this yearbook. I don't even know where the hell they got it. And that's so just
sketchy.
It just so happened that Marvin had given Eugene a ride the night of the wedding reception. Sorry, Von Trail's all breathing.
I know. I was like, what is that noise?
Von Trail's freaking breath.
So, wait. Marvin gave Eugene a ride?
Mm-hmm. The night of the wedding. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reception.
The same night of as John.
As John. Was, yes. Yeah. All this whole thing is going out down the
same. At the same time. Mm-hmm.
At the same time. So Marvin immediately becomes a person of interest because he's the only one that has a vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure.
So that's how Marvin was placed at the scene of the crime.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so we're going to move on to George's confession.
Mm-hmm.
So the night of the crime, George had completely blacked out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So yeah, remember that's the one that was doing the drinking game, mm-hmm. and him and his friend left because mm-hmm. they were losing.
Yeah.
So he passed out.
Right.
Doesn't remember anything.
So remember the day after the party when George showed up to the hospital mm-hmm. for his hurt foot?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The nurse asked George how he hurt his foot, and he said because he possibly got into a fight, but couldn't remember everything because he was wasted.
Mm-hmm.
George was unaware at this point that John Hartman was fighting for his life in that very same hospital. But the nurse knew of John Hartman. And of course.
So she's going to like try and can't even talk. She's trying to play detective.
Mm-hmm.
Girl, stick with your
profession. Stay in your lane, bitch. Stay in your lane.
Stick with your profession. You're a fucking nurse, not a goddamn detective.
Mm-hmm.
Sherlock fucking Holmes.
Yes. So the nurse took this opportunity and asked George, well, what happened to the other guy? Jokingly, George replied, well, I don't think you'll be seeing or hearing from the other guy.
See, this is why people need to mind their business.
Mm-hmm. Stay in your lane.
Oh, my God.
At that point, the nurse contacted detectives that were still working on the John Hartman crime and told them what George said.
That doesn't mean anything. It's all circumstantial.
Yes. So detectives asked George's girlfriend
mm-hmm.
to go pick up George's boots from home and bring them back to the hospital. So the girlfriend did, because the girlfriend's the one that took them to the hospital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Once the boots were in the detective's position, get this, the nurse and the detective began comparing the marks on John Hartman's face to George's boots.
That, again, all circumstantial. Mm-hmm. That could... How many people have the same fucking shoe?
Mm-hmm.
How many people have the same size of shoe?
Exactly.
That does not mean a fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are these people stupid?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And it gets worse.
Ugh.
So this was a huge turning point in the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
The officers take this alleged lead mm-hmm. and begin filling in the blanks, as they did before.
With the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. George had been up all night, puro pinche party. Mm-hmm. He is exhausted and more than likely still intoxicated.
Mm-hmm.
The officers placed George in an investigation room and began drilling him. Taking this opportunity to turn the guys against one another and provide suggestive scenarios, mm-hmm. placing the guys at the scene of the crime.
Like they did with Chris Watts.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So, police threatened George that Kevin is going to put the blame on him for all of this. Again, after several hours of interrogation, George stated, I just kicked him a couple of times and that was it, I guess.
But he doesn't even remember because he was so lit.
Right.
He can't even remember anything.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just probably telling them, thinking he's only going to get in trouble for disorderly conduct, correct. Probably.
Yes.
And uh-huh. not a fucking murder charge. Like, right. what the hell?
Right. So police took George and Eugene's statements as full confessions.
That's not a confession.
Police charged all four guys with the brutal beating and murder of John Hartman. Both Eugene and George's false confessions incriminated themselves, Kevin Pease and Marvin Roberts. So,
and Marvin's just playing a fucking Uber driver for the night.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I did want to say, I didn't write this down, but in both of their confessions, both guys went into detail, like extreme detail, but they were also intoxicated, and the detectives were giving them scenarios. But I'm talking like this is 10, 12 hours into being interrogated, and then denying it multiple times.
Yeah, and then they're feeding them the details of the beating,
right?
Of the crime, they're giving them details and trying and turning them against one another.
Right.
And everything they have is circumstantial. That doesn't necessarily mean anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I wear the same size shoe as two of my daughters.
Right.
And we share shoes. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean anything. I mean, and there's people that have the same size shoes as me mm-hmm. and probably have the same shoes as I do.
Right.
You and I have the same shoes. Mm-hmm. All, like, we have a whole bunch of shoes that are the same. Mm-hmm. That doesn't, oh my God, people are ridiculous.
So let's move on to the trials. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because, well, I'll get into that, but okay, so let's fast forward to the trial. Mm-hmm. There was a young teen by the name of Arlo Olson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Arlo was the prosecution's star witness. Okay. A few days after the beating, Arlo Olson stated that he seen all four guys rob someone while he sat on the steps outside of the old Eagle reception hall, the wedding. Mm-hmm. He was at the wedding.
Yeah.
Okay. Arlo stated that he was outside the hall smoking a cigarette and he heard another guest from the wedding yell, "Fight." Arlo said that it wasn't a fight. It was actually a wedding guest that had been robbed. He'd just been robbed. Another mm-hmm. wedding guest.
Yeah.
After the robbery, the wedding guest walked back to the wedding. That's when someone from the wedding called the police and reported that one of their wedding guests had been robbed. Okay. Arlo told police that he saw them kick the victim one or two times and that was it. Arlo also stated that he heard the guys telling the victim while the victim was on the floor, "Give us what you got, bitch." Okay.
Mm-hmm.
However, Arlo also stated that it was dark that night, but there were lights in the parking lot.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. By Arlo's own admission, he was lit like a Christmas tree because his girlfriend kept begging him to dance, and he didn't like to dance until he had some happy juice flowing through his veins. So he was drinking a lot, too.
He was drunk.
Mm-hmm. So during the third trial, the defense team called one of the actual officers that was at the crime scene that night mm-hmm. to the stand. Under oath, that officer admitted that he measured the distance from which Arlo stated he had witnessed the robbery mm-hmm. to the actual location of the robbery, and it resulted in 550 feet, which is like pretty far.
Yeah.
And during one of the documentaries that I watched, reporter Serene Fox, I hope I'm saying her name right, measured the distance herself and saw where Arlo supposedly was sitting that night mm-hmm. and the view to the parking lot. It appeared almost impossible to see details even during the day.
Okay. Oh my God.
So let's just be clear on something. Arlo's eyewitness testimony of the robbery had nothing to do with the actual beating of John Hartman's resulting in death.
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with that. It was a robbery.
Yeah.
And obviously it wasn't John Hartman. It was one of the other wedding guests mm-hmm. that had got robbed.
Yeah, sure.
So the other wedding guests did not point out that the four guys, Marvin, Eugene, Kevin, and what was the other guy's name?
George.
George. He didn't point them out. Mm-hmm. He said he had been robbed, but he knew it wasn't them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I just want to make that clear. So how
the fuck is he a star witness?
Okay. However, Arlo's statement regarding the robbery is ultimately what got the ball rolling. The state was able to build a case based on this robbery.
That he might have seen or might not have seen.
Right. The state claimed that the robbery was the main crime that led to a multi-crime spree, ultimately resulting in the brutal beating and death of John Hartman. That was their case.
That doesn't even make any sense.
Yes. So please keep in mind that Arlo had several pending charges for assault on women while under the influence.
Of course he did.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Several years later, Arlo admits that he was threatened with perjury, going to jail, and that the officers would send troopers to get him if he did not testify.
I believe that.
I do too. Arlo also admits that he was not certain what he saw that night, and he was trying to get leeway, basically.
Yeah, he didn't want to go to prison either. Mm-hmm. He was like trying to keep out of prison too. Mm-hmm.
Arlo then stated that he didn't care at this point how long they kept him in jail. You know, this is past the trials. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In an interview, Arlo also said, if they put me on the stand, I will testify on the defendant's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
That I gave.
Yeah, he was coerced into making a false statement.
And I didn't write this down, this detail, but Arlo... he was changing his story. He had changed his story, like his stories multiple times. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So also keep that in mind. However, 6 months into the investigation, none of the physical evidence matches up with the confessions of George and Eugene or any of the guys. Every shred of evidence that was sent off for testing came back negative. So this was back in 97 when DNA was barely coming out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So everything came back negative. The boots came back as a negative match for the marks that were left on John Hartman's face.
Oh my God.
That the nurse freaking was trying to play detective.
Yes.
And Kevin P's jacket that had a little bit of blood on it, that was also sent in for testing, which also came back as a negative match to John Hartman. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The blood on the jacket was Kevin P's own blood.
Oh my God.
None of the four guys' fingerprints matched the prints on John Hartman.
So they found fingerprints on John Hartman. Where at on it? On
it
him?
Didn't say. Okay. I didn't get that information. The crime tech couldn't even match Marvin to his own car because the condition of the car was so grimy, it was hard to get anything.
Oh, my God.
So they couldn't even match Marvin being in his own freaking car, which is wild, you know?
Like, okay.
Yeah. So based on physical evidence, detectives have no evidence linking the suspects to the victim or even linking the suspects to the crime.
So how are they able to get a conviction off of that?
Mm-hmm. When detectives had taken pictures of John Hartman while he was in the hospital, they did not take a picture with the measurement tape or like a ruler against his injuries or the marks on his face. They just took like
regular pictures.
Yeah, regular pictures.
Not any type of
measurement.
Evidential pictures. Nothing. I don't even know if that's a word, evidential. Any kind of evidence
picture. Evidentiary.
Evidentiary. That so, might be a word.
I know, right? The prosecution created a transparency picture of the bottom of George's boots and placed that over the physical markings on John Hartman's face.
Mm-hmm.
But that should have never been able to make it to the trial considering they did not have any actual measurements.
Yeah.
It's like basically falsifying documents because you can enlarge it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or put it smaller, make it smaller.
You can fit it to your advantage.
Exactly.
Or,
to your benefit.
Yes, to your benefit. Right. There you go.
So Marvin and Eugene were offered plea deals. 5 years this is what they were offered. 5 years if they turned on their friends, Kevin and George. Both of them declined those plea deals.
Well, yeah.
They said, we didn't do anything. They didn't do anything. We're not gonna, taking it.
Yeah.
We'll go to trial.
Well, yeah. What the hell? So,
I kind of didn't really understand how this worked, and I didn't write it down, but I'm just going off of memory. They kept saying that there was like three trials, and I didn't understand that. So usually they said when you have multiple trials, it's because they're hoping that the defendants will turn on each other.
Yeah.
So since George and Eugene had confessions, that was one trial. And then Marvin had his own trial. And then Kevin had his own trial. Okay. So that's why there was three trials. Three separate trials. So the trial was actually moved out of Fairbanks, and all the trials took place in Anchorage, Alaska, because of all the pre-trial publicity and media coverage. So they actually moved it out of town.
Yeah. Which doesn't even make sense, because if there's publicity in Fairbanks, you cannot tell me that Anchorage didn't see it. You cannot tell me that.
Right.
Because there's shit that goes on in Phoenix, and we see it here in Casa Grande.
Exactly.
We see it in Eloy. We see it in Tucson. We see it in freaking Nogales. We see it in Yuma. I mean, come on. It doesn't matter. Yes. I just don't think that's even fair.
Yes.
Because if you... Okay, anyways, I'm going to go on a rant. Anyways, go ahead.
So, in the eyes of many, during the third trial, the prosecutor exposed himself as a racist bigot.
He did? That motherfucker. What happened?
Motherfucker. Freak his ass. Freak that motherfucker.
Look here, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Hey, motherfucker.
Hey, motherfucker. Okay, so the prosecutor references the 30 to 40 alibi witnesses to the Spartacus story. If you don't know about this story, pay attention. There's going to be a test.
Okay.
So I had to actually look this up because, of course, I don't like to read and I'm not into history.
Spartacus, like the movie Spartacus?
I'm pretty sure. I haven't seen that movie.
That's a good movie.
But when the basically what Spartacus is when the Romans were demanding the slaves to expose who Spartacus was, one slave stood up and said, "I am Spartacus." And then another slave stood up and said, "I am Spartacus," and so on and so forth, to protect their fellow people, right? Yeah. So even though they had 30 to 40 alibis placing these four guys present at the wedding and not being involved in the robbery, the prosecutor stuck to Arlo's one and only statement.
So first of all. How did he expose himself as a bigot? What did he do? What did he say?
Well, that's what I just said.
Spartacus thing.
Catch me outside. I just went into this whole history, freaking buff, and you just ran me right over.
You're like, did you not hear what I said?
Basically calling the Alaska Native slaves, and that these 30 to 40 alibi witnesses are just trying to
cover up for them.
Correct. Okay. Saying that they saw them there, this, that, and the third.
Trying to protect their people. Quote-unquote, their people.
Correct.
I'm using air quotes.
Yes.
Quote-unquote, their people. Okay, yes. I get it now.
What I just said. So, that was made very clear. So, now...
Loser.
Jerk. So, let's go into the support team.
Okay.
Friends and family of the Fairbanks community knew these four guys weren't capable of brutally beating and murdering anyone. Evan Peters, the community chief and vice chancellor at the University of Fairbanks, believed and still believes that these young men were sent to prison based on institutionalized racism.
I have to agree.
8% of Alaskan natives make up the Alaskan population. 8%.
Dang.
Okay. While 36% of male prisoners are Alaskan natives. So Brian O'Donohue, a University of Fairbanks professor, had been following and working on this case for the last 20 years.
Oh, shit. They're still in prison?
No, they're not. Oh. But like, he followed the case from the beginning
to, like,
literally to now. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Brian worked as a local newspaper reporter and then was hired to do investigative reporting at the University of Fairbanks in Alaska.
Okay.
So Brian thought it would be a great classroom project to have an actual case to investigate. So he assigned the local Fairbanks 4 case to his students.
Oh, that's an awesome idea. Right? I love that idea. Uh-huh. I wish I had a professor like that.
Yes. So Brian thought it would only take one semester of brainstorming for the students to find answers. Mm-hmm. Brian and his students first noticed several inconsistencies with the time frame between all four guys. Mm-hmm. Oh, crap. What the freak? Okay. Yep. Brian and his students continued their research for several years and never gave up hope. They continued to ask questions and investigate any possible leads. Mm-hmm. Brian stated that one of his students actually camped out at the Court of Appeals office for 3 days going through court documents.
Oh, I would love to do that.
There were several pieces of the confessions that were concealed and not released to the jury during the trial.
Yeah, because they were fucking lying about everything.
Yes. This student was able to find the concealed portions of the confessions.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
No.
Found files. So Brian also had another student that was a previous Coast Guard military police officer.
No fucking way.
No. So this particular student quickly picked up on the fact that there should be some type of physical evidence.
Yeah.
Considering the brutal beating, right, of John Hartman. Duh.
Right? Avery loves that word. Duh.
This is how vested these students were to finding answers and seeking justice. I just love that.
I know.
And that was
so
my, that way I had to add that in there. I was like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Which leads me to Shirley Lee. She is literally an angel on earth.
Aww.
Literally. Shirley is a minister / director of Tiana Chiefs Conference. And I don't even know if I'm saying it right.
Yeah.
And also runs the Tribal Association.
Okay.
Shirley would become the Fairbanks 4 biggest advocate.
Oh.
Okay.
Sherry, we love you. Mm-hmm. You should contact us and tell us all about it.
For sure.
We'd love to hear from you, Sherry.
Mm-hmm. So Shirley's son, Daniel, was serving time with the Fairbanks 4 guys.
Oh, was he? Mm-hmm. Was he now?
Oh, he was. So what did you call her?
Sherry.
Sherry.
Shirley. Oh, sorry.
Shirley.
Sorry, Shirley. I meant Shirley.
Shirley is the one that got the ball rolling and began raising awareness for the Fairbanks 4 wrongful conviction.
Oh my God.
April Marino, which is also a writer, actually grew up with all the four guys.
Oh, nice.
April wanted to help spread the word of the wrongful conviction, so she began a blog to help raise awareness and collaborated with Shirley.
Oh, nice.
After 10 years and 6 or 7 appeals, all being denied through the court, the case finally caught a break.
Oh.
Yes.
10 years?
10 years.
So 2007.
Girl. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. How much time we got?
Oh,
a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I'm all stuck on stupid. I'm all still thinking about Shirley.
So let's move on to the retrial.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In May 2009, Executive Director Bill Oberle with the Alaskan Innocence Project took over the case.
Ooh, nice.
Bill found out about a confession. What?
Shut the front door.
There was a concealed confession that the state knew about. However, the state did nothing, absolutely nothing, to help aid the Fairbanks 4 case.
Are you freaking kidding me? I'm trying not to cuss because I know mom hates that. Yes. Even though I've been cussing half the time.
You remembered.
Right? I remembered right now, barely. What?
Mm-hmm. No.
No. Oh, my God. They knew about this confession and didn't do anything.
They knew about
this confession. They never said anything. They sealed it. How the fuck can you seal a confession?
I know.
How the fuck can you do that? Mm-hmm. Sorry, mom. How the freak can you do that?
Yes. So in 2012, mija,
uh-huh,
William Holmes contacts the Innocence Project and gave sworn statements and a full confession that in high school, he and a couple of high school friends would drive around late at night looking for drunk natives to beat up. That's when they came across 15-year-old John Hartman.
Oh my God. God, that mother freaker.
Freak his ass. So according to William Holmes,
mm-hmm,
that is something that he and his friends did quite often for fun.
That is not fun at all.
That pisses me off.
Yes.
That's bull. Like, yes. Come on. You know?
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That is not fun at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, why don't you just beat up on each other? Fight club.
Right.
That's what you want to do. Like,
get your ass into MMA, yeah, all that shit. I mean, come on.
That's what I'm saying. Fight club. Like, freaking beat up on each other.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Mm. So, that will happen.
Y luego. So, Bill wanted to make sure that William Holmes wasn't just joking to him, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he decided to reach out to Jason Wallace himself.
Which is...
What's that guy's name? William Holmes, one of William Holmes' friends.
Quote unquote, we're using air quotes, friends.
Friends that was present that night.
He was
one of the friends involved in doing this beat up shit.
Mm-hmm.
So Bill wanted to make sure that William Holmes wasn't just joking to him.
Yeah, he wasn't just
decided to reach out
up
to Jason Wallace himself and get his recollection of events. It was discovered, you're going to shit out of your mouth right now.
Oh, I'm sweating.
Yes.
I'm so mad I'm sweating.
It was discovered back in 2003,
mm-hmm,
which would have been only 5 years after they were incarcerated. Mm-hmm. Back in 2003, there was an inmate concealed confession from Jason Wallace himself. However, it wasn't used because it didn't benefit Jason at the time. So they concealed it.
So he confessed to doing the murder, to be aiding and abetting,
mm-hmm,
or being affiliated with the murder. But they concealed it because it wasn't going to help him out with conviction at the time.
Correct.
Oh, correct. That is
bullshit. Five years, girl. 5 years after.
Oh my God. These kids.
Yes. 5 years. Okay. So Jason Wallace, who was currently serving time for another murder, actually multiple murders.
Oh my God.
Drug trafficking, admitted to his public defender that him and William Holmes were responsible for the beating and murder of John Hartman. That was his confession in 2003.
Oh, my God.
Bill tried to reach out to Jason, trying to get him to restate his confession, but was unsuccessful.
Well, yeah, because he knows that at that point.
So keep in mind that Jason and William, they were doing double life for multiple murders.
Because they were already in prison
at this point in 2012. Mm-hmm. Of course, Jason Wallace was not about to incriminate himself again. Jason Wallace refused to speak to anybody.
Well, yeah, because it's not going to benefit him, that piece of shit.
Yep. Bill had a bright idea and asked Marvin to write a letter to William Holmes, the other suspect in the murder.
The one that said it was me. The one that they found the sealed confession on.
Yes.
Because he had a sealed confession as well.
No, he called
the Innocence Project. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that's what it was. He called the Innocence Project. Yeah. But Jason's the one that had the sealed confession.
Mm-hmm. In 2003.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Just trying to clarify.
Yeah.
Want to clarify.
Okay. So Bill asked Marvin to basically state in the letter that he was serving a life sentence for a crime he did not commit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Alrighty. So.
So.
I lost my place. Hold on.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
My bad.
That's all right. Okay. So I had lost my spot, but I remembered where I'm at.
Okay.
So Bill asked Marvin. So Bill, remember, is the attorney.
Yes, the attorney.
Mm-hmm. Asked Marvin to basically state in the letter that he was serving a life sentence for a crime he did not commit. Mm-hmm. And if William could contact Bill regarding John Hartman's death. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Marvin wrote the letter and sent it to William Holmes. And a few months later, Bill received, and it could have been years, but it just said a while later that that Bill received a response from William, which is the sworn confession in 2012.
Yes.
Okay. At this time, please keep in mind that Jason Wallace and William Holmes were in prison for 5 murders and a drug trafficking charge.
Okay, but they weren't the only ones that committed that murder on
John Hartman.
John Hartman.
Correct.
There were more than just them two.
That's what I understand.
Okay.
That it was multiple guys, but I don't know. It wasn't confirmed. It just lists these two guys.
Because they're the ones that had been, they're the ones that had the confessions.
Correct.
And they're the ones that
Are incarcerated at this time doing double murder or double
license. So it seems, or it sounds to me like Jason Wallace and this Holmes character were like kind of like the masterminds behind.
Yeah. And maybe it was just them two that night. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, from what it sounds like when William Holmes goes on the stand.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't got there yet.
So. Yeah, we haven't got there yet. But
it sounds to me like Jason is more like the mastermind. Like, and maybe Holmes follows his lead, or maybe they both. Well, it sounds to me like if there were more people involved in John Hartman's murder, it seems like those two would be the masterminds. But I mean, if I would have to guess which one was the puppet master and which one was the puppeteer, I think it would be
Jason would be
the puppet master, and Holmes would be, you know, and I don't even know if puppeteer is an actual word. I'm just making up my own words tonight.
I don't know. I can't get words right. Even the ones that are real. So, moving on. So had these two perpetrators been investigated and arrested back in 1997, several people might still be alive today.
Mm-mm.
Right?
Yeah, because then they went on another killing spree.
Yep, and 2 different states. They had multiple murders in 2 different states.
In Alaska and where else?
It was, I don't know where they found them at originally, but they were out of Alaska at that point.
Oh my God. But they probably extradited them back to Alaska for murders in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Insanity. So right now, Holmes is doing time in California, but Jason is in Alaska.
Okay.
Yeah. So during the retrial, William Holmes took the stand against Jason Wallace and recanted the series of events that took place the night of John Hartman's beating and murder.
Mm-hmm.
Beating resulting in murder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Arlo Olson, remember the guy that stated he saw the robbery or witnessed
the robbery?
The one
that said he was coerced into testifying against the Fairbanks Four?
Yes. So Arlo Olson also took the stand during the retrial. Arlo also stated that in his initial statement, he told police that he could not see that far and he was also drunk. Mm-hmm. Arlo also stated he told police that all he saw for sure was a beige car.
Okay.
Arlo admitted that after hours in the investigation room, Detective Aaron Ring stated it couldn't have been a beige car. It had to have been a 2-door blue car. Marvin Roberts only drives a 2-door blue car. Arlo agreed he admitted to a false confession.
But that doesn't mean, okay, so he, you know what the fuck you saw.
Mm-hmm. He was also drunk.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is, like, if it was a blue two-door car, I'm sure he would have said it was a blue car or a dark-colored car. Right. Right?
But then he was getting threatened.
No, yeah, remember? I know. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if that was the car, he would have said that that was the car. But he didn't. He said it was the beige one. And they're forcing him to say, because it would, they were trying to fit this confession to benefit them.
Exactly. So.
So frustrating.
It is beyond frustrating. This case is just all around crazy and whatever. But anyways, okay, so moving on. The retrial took 5 weeks and the community was outraged, waiting on a verdict.
Okay, I was going to ask a question, but I'll ask after.
Okay. The same day of the retrial, the Fairbanks Four had a separate settlement hearing with the state of Alaska, requesting for their immediate release and to be exonerated of their charges.
Yeah, what the fuck?
And on December 15th, 2015, the state agreed to release all four inmates immediately and also to exonerate all charges. However, there's a stipulation.
I don't even want to hear it.
However, all four guys had to sign a waiver that they would never sue.
I was going to say
the
that.
The state I of knew. Alaska. Or the Fairbanks Police Department for their wrongful convictions
and fuckers.
All the time served.
No. Fuck no.
So
did they agree to it?
On December 15th, 2015, they had been served. They had served 18 years.
Okay? Yeah.
In the final minute entry, the court basically stated that any investigators, detectives, or prosecutors didn't commit any crime. So what? Basically, it was all swept under the rug. All their persuasive statements, God, everything.
This is so
at this point, up. Kevin had already lost his mother. She passed away while he was in prison. George's daughter was an adult already. She was 3 or 4 years old when he went in.
Oh, my God.
His daughter actually had her own daughter that was around 3 or 4 years old at this time. So she was, his granddaughter was the same age as his daughter when he went in. He was a grandpa. And they accepted it. They accepted because
They just wanted to get out.
They accepted the stipulations. They all signed a waiver and they were released that day. Can somebody
else sue everybody?
So, yeah, get this. So, in 2017, the Fairbanks Four filed a lawsuit against the city of Fairbanks. Not the state.
Yeah.
And not the police department. But the city of Fairbanks. For their rights to compensation for the time that they, for the time that was lost in prison. Mm-hmm. And I did not write this down, but I, in looking through it today, they also lost that case.
What?
They will not be compensated.
Why not?
They said that they did no wrong, and also because they signed that waiver.
That doesn't include the city, though.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They were denied compensation.
Oh, that is, God, that irritates my soul.
So moving,
why do people not get, this is not okay. You took 20 years from somebody.
Right. Mm-hmm. 20 years. And I want to put in there, which I thought I did, but apparently I erased it. So it didn't give me the exact date or the exact ages of each of the guys that were, all the guys that were arrested and charged, but it did give a age range. So I know Kevin for sure was 17. Mm-hmm. So they said they were between the ages of 17 and 21. Okay. That's all that I found. I couldn't find their birth dates or the actual age.
How cool would it be if we heard from the Fairbanks?
I know. That would be awesome. At least one of them.
I know.
So let's talk about the aftermath here. The investigator for, okay, so get this. This is some twisted shit right here. Okay.
Can it get any more twisted?
I know.
I'm like so pissed off. I'm like, oh.
I know. It's crazy.
My face is red.
Are you sure it's not the wine? No.
It probably is, but I feel like it's because I'm pissed off.
Yeah, I know. My armpits are all sweaty.
I know. I'm like,
I'm going to have to take another shower right now. But an investigator for the public defender's office, get this, became a board member on the Innocence Project board.
An investigator on the defendant's case?
For the public defenders.
Yeah, the public defender. Yeah, that's that. Okay.
Uh-huh. The public defender's office.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one that defended them when they were going to trial.
Correct.
Okay.
So a public defender investigator became
a board member on the Innocence Project.
Yes, the Alaskan Innocence Project.
It
is believed that is how the Innocence Project was able to get a hold of those concealed confession documents.
No.
What?
Well, yes, good Neha. For that person.
Good for you.
Hell yeah.
So
he was here / she was probably pissed off like we are, like I'm right. I'm like so mad.
Right?
That is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
So get this. This is more twisted.
Mm-hmm.
So privileged communication between attorney and client is the reason why that confession was able to be concealed. That 2003 confession from Jason Wallace. Uh-huh.
Yeah, makes sense.
Privileged communication between attorney and client, right?
Yeah, confidential. It's kind of like the priest and the confession thing. When you confess to a priest,
right,
you can't go and say, this person confessed this to me.
Yeah, gossip or whatever, Helen or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
So since this case, Alaska amended their bar rules. That is, that an attorney themselves can waive client-attorney privilege if the information withheld is valid evidence for a wrongful conviction.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
That should be in every fucking state.
Yes, and that's what was said. So now get this. Alaska is only the second state to do that.
Who was the first?
I didn't check. Oh. But all other 48 states have not done that. They don't
they
do
need
that.
To. Which they is need bullshit. To get on it.
Yes.
That's it. I'm going to the court.
That's
I'm going
to go. You know what? I'm protesting.
I am. I'm going to protest by myself.
Yes.
I'm going to be the only picketer.
All sweaty out there in the hot
I'm
sun.
I'm going to be like, who is this?
You're going to be all
bitch.
Melting into the ground. In an interview 2 years after they were released, Marvin Roberts did admit that he would give his friends a ride here and there, but he didn't understand how the police were able to place all of them together at the same time that particular night. Because the other three guys, Kevin, Eugene, or George, this is kind of weird. So earlier it said that he had given George a ride, but it didn't say like to or from, but he says the other three guys, Kevin, Eugene, or George, whenever in his car that particular night. That was kind of conflicting. But Marvin also stated that the media and police blew the story completely out of proportion.
I don't trust the fucking media.
Yes.
Because, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Marvin believes that none of them ever had a fighting chance to convince the public otherwise.
Yeah.
Which I agree.
Oh,
when the reporter asked Marvin, what was the first night in jail like? Marvin replied, it was awful. He said he cried a couple of times. He couldn't sleep. Lots of praying and lots of wondering why he was there.
I'm going to start crying.
I know. It was sad, girl. When George was asked about his experience in jail, he stated he was in pilot mode, where every day is exactly the same. You wake up, you have breakfast at the same time, lunch at the same time, dinner at the same time. And it's just the same thing over and over again.
It's like
you're just in pilot mode. Yep. Mm-hmm. All four guys served their prison sentence together in the same prison, which is, I mean, kind of good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Did
they stick together?
Yep. Through the support of their family, friends, and each other, they never lost hope. And that's what ultimately helped them get through all those years in prison.
Oh my God, I'm going to cry.
All four men still remain very close to this day, even after their release from prison. And that's it, everybody. That's let me give the credits here before I get in trouble.
Before we get in trouble.
Yeah, this though on YouTube, I don't know if it's a channel or what, but it's called Vice, mm-hmm. V-I-C-E.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And the reporter was Serene Fox. I hope mm-hmm. I'm saying her name right. Serene Fox. I also got other information from University of Fairbanks Professor Brian O'Donohue.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually was in this, it's a podcast also, but it's on YouTube. It's like, oh, okay. I guess... Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Somebody was telling us to put our podcast on YouTube.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. So
I think I should try, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, this was really cool. I had never heard about it,
mm-hmm.
But I'm assuming he also has like a regular podcast. Mm-hmm. It's called Injustice Anywhere Radio.
Oh, cool.
Okay. I also got that on YouTube. And that Brian O'Donohue, mm-hmm. he's in that whole hour podcast, and he gave... Oh
such good information.
Such good information. I watched the Vice documentary, mm-hmm. which was really good. But I mean, talk about gory details. Brian O'Donohue, that professor, he gives did. A oh. lot of information in that Injustice Anywhere. It was just awesome. Like
oh,
when I did, when I watched the documentary, it really had good information. I really, you know, I really mm-hmm. love documentaries, but that other one, man, I got a lot of information, so I was oh, nice. Able to get a lot of stuff from him. But I also wanted just to, you know, with that being said, I mean, these guys,
mm-hmm.
they served, you know, 18 years of their life. And
let's round it off to 20.
Yeah, just, yeah.
Fuck them,
and
people.
That's what they say, 2 decades, right? Mm-hmm. That's what yeah. it is.
Yep.
And... I mean, it blows my mind because basically all they had, and that's what that professor said,
mm-hmm.
all they had was those false confessions. And now I guess they've also changed it. I don't know if it's everywhere, if it's just Alaska,
mm-hmm.
but that they shouldn't be interrogating people that are intoxicated under the influence of something.
Yeah.
Which they shouldn't be anyways.
Yes.
But I also, you know, especially with me watching those... confession tapes mm-hmm. that confession tapes mm-hmm. on Netflix yeah. that mm-hmm. series
mm-hmm.
oh man, I mean this just falls right into that whole yeah. category. And you know, these young guys, I mean they're young, and I think we talked about it after your podcast last week, you know, they didn't know any better. A lot of people don't know any better. And to be honest, I mean, I do, and I did know about the Miranda rights, and I did know that, you know, you shouldn't speak to anybody yeah. or anything like mm-hmm, that.
Sure.
But I mean, in doing this podcast, I'm like, wow, it's really eye opening. You know, if I seen a neighbor's house going up in flames and a police officer knocked on my door and was like, I'm sorry, ma'am, can I speak to you? You know, can you come down to the station? We're trying to find, you know, how this home caught on fire, or if you saw anything, can you come down to the station and answer questions? My dumbass, I would have went.
Yeah.
Thinking.
You're helping.
I'm helping. I want to help somebody. If my house was on fire, yeah. I would hope that somebody would give some kind of good information.
Right.
So me being the stupid ass that I am, I would go and be like, yeah, you know, I saw this because I'm so damn nosy, you know, looking out the windows and shit,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I would not even dream to think that the police or detectives or whatever would try to turn it on me or something, you know.
And a lot of people think like that.
Right.
A
trustworthy, lot of right?
think like that. Will mm-hmm. you trust? You trust law enforcement. You
right.
trust the justice system. Mm-hmm. You trust, you know, the prosecutors, that you're, you know, the public defenders. And yes. I'm sorry, but the public defenders are also a part of it, too.
Yes. Uh-huh.
They, you know, these lawyers, they talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
They have lunch together. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, dinners together. They talk to each other and, you know, in each other's offices. I mean, it's like any
regular
else.
Company,
yeah,
you know?
Anything or, else. I mm-hmm. mean, they are all in it together.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. Like, you know, in doing this podcast, it has opened up.
It really has.
A lot. I mean, it's Woke me up. Stay woke.
Yep. Stay woke. Like, hashtag stay woke for us.
Stay woke.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's crazy. It is insane.
Right. And you know, with this particular story, the Fairbanks Four
case. Thanks, Audra.
Yeah. Thank you, Audra. I mean, this is, I'm talking, you know, and it's a coincidence. And it doesn't even, I'm like, you know, you think about it. How many coincidences can there be?
I don't believe in coincidences, but there are coincidences.
I do, and I always have. But, I mean, you know, you're like, okay, maybe one coincidence. Yeah. Even two. Okay, yeah, I'll give you that. But three, four? Come on now. Mm-hmm. That's just crazy. But in this case, they were not even together. No, not... They were near within each blocks other, of this said...
they were like within the vicinity.
The vicinity. But that does not mean that they are, were involved.
Yes. Or that they're, that they're involved and that they're guilty.
Right.
Doesn't mean anything.
And I mean, you know, it could be said like for me, okay, I'm at home, but, you know, a crime happens down the road here at a, you know, Dunkin' Donuts, a robbery or something.
I love Dunkin'
That's
Donuts.
Down the road.
Yeah.
Does it mean that I was there because I'm in the vicinity? No.
Exactly. Right?
I'm at home probably freaking finger flicking my bead or something. You know what I mean? Who knows? But minding my own business.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just sick. It is, you know,
insane. It's insanity.
Yeah.
I swear, it's crazy.
It and I feel is. So sorry for these guys.
Well, yeah, they lost 20 years of their life.
20 years. I cannot. It's made me so sick. I wanted to throw up. Probably because I had crying. Crap attacks. It's just sad. Ugh. But, you know, I'm like, I mean, come on. You know, this is what I have such a hard time understanding is because when law enforcement... Or, you know, like you said, defectors. I said defectives.
Detectives.
Prosecutors, whatever, public defenders, public whatever. Defenders, blah, blah, blah.
Judges.
You know, judges, all of that crap. They're all commingled in this shit. But, I mean, that they can so quickly change somebody's life.
Oh,
but
yeah.
To overturn it. It's literally an act of God. It's taking 20 years of four people's lives. And one of the articles I read, cumulative, is that how you say it? Cumulative? Mm-hmm. Like, they served over 70 years between the four of them. Over 70 years. How sick is
that? I know. And I was going to say something and I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. No, but I mean...
I'm not saying that. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
No.
I'm not saying that everybody, you know, is a bad judge
or a bad prosecutor or a bad public defender or a bad detective. That's not what we're saying.
Not at all.
You know.
Or even that there's, you know, that everybody gives false confessions. Because I'm not saying that
that's
at all.
That's not true, yeah.
I just think that...
It makes you wonder how many more are there, huh?
Exactly. It makes me wonder how many more are there like these four.
Yeah. And think about how many, like, okay, so like the Fairbanks Four, everything was quote-unquote, and I'm using air quotes, circumstantial.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they botched that fucking case. They're taking pictures without the measurement thing or whatever.
Well, the nurse to come forward. Hey, I mean, I know that you're like, you know, but that's not your job.
Exactly. I mean,
come on.
The nurse trying to play detective. Get out of here, girl. That's not your job.
That's
what we're trying, doing.
I know. We're over here trying to be all detective too. But anyways,
but,
nevertheless.
You know, we're not going.
We're not when they're knocking on people's doors and shit, you know. But,
I mean, I was.
Oh, yeah. I take that back. Well, I mean, you know what? Fuck it. I mean, we had to get our hands dirty.
No, but I mean, what I was going to say earlier was that, like, if you see something or if you know something's wrong as a judge, as a prosecutor, as a detective, I mean... As a public defender, did I already say that? Mm-hmm. But if you
as a defective,
if you know something's not right, or if you have, I mean, there's people that could quote unquote tip off people. Like, I'm not saying to break the law, but I'm telling you to break the law. You know, because, I mean, if it's going to save somebody's life, think about that. Right. About that.
Think about it. That. Cash me outside. How about that?
I said, think about that.
Think about all that. I don't know what the hell's wrong with our tongues today. Hell, like somebody cut them off or some shit.
It's that damn wine.
It's all la, 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 freaking loose lips and shit.
But... But seriously, like, you know, even as a witness, like, if you're being coerced like Arlo was, I mean, you need to, there's people, those detectives don't own that police department. Go above their head. If they're not willing to do something, go above their head. If they're not willing to do something, go to the fucking media. Mm-hmm. I mean, the media likes to stir shit up. Why not stir the shit pot? Why not give them something to stir the shit pot with? Because they fucking love that shit, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's just awful.
I mean, do the right thing. I mean, I don't know. That makes me so fucking mad, pissed off. Yes,
I know.
That is just, that's insanity. It's not okay.
It is not okay. And I mean,
and those
if you guys don't believe in this shit, like seriously, it happens. And
it happens all the time.
It happens all the time. I'm not saying everybody's innocent.
And then think if that was your son or your daughter or your grandson or your granddaughter or your uncle, your nephew, your niece, your wife, right? Your husband. Like, think of it like that.
I was like, man, this is just insane.
Great case suggestion.
Audra, that, oh my gosh.
I hope you enjoyed this segment, Audra.
Yeah, and I'm sorry that I was all loose lipped.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know what happened, but.
I don't know.
Whole point being is, look, my heart goes out to the Fairbanks for, Marvin, he's a public speaker.
Is he?
He speaks sometimes. Oh, yes.
I'd love to hear from one of them or all of them. I'd love to have him on the podcast.
He speaks like at high school graduations.
Does he?
Little kids, kindergarten, school graduations. I'm assuming the schools are really tiny there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the graduations and stuff like that.
If anybody knows the Fairbanks Four or if you know how to get a hold of them or get in touch with them. Please, please, please tell them to contact us.
Yeah, that would be so awesome.
I would love to hear from them.
Right. Mm-hmm. But yep, that's it. So I hope everybody enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you.
No problem.
You did a really good job covering that case.
There was a lot of, it was like the.
Like you hit a jackpot, huh?
Yeah. Well, it was like the Ed Gein. I was like, oh crap, how can I not put this stuff in there? There's like so much info. Like, you have to put it in there because it's so important.
It's like,
you know, like ties it all.
I know we got another good case suggestion today.
I did too. I got two this week from the same person. So,
Well, then I had like three. I have like three. So,
okay.
We have to write them down because
I have them written down right here in my notes in my phone.
I need to do that.
I just start writing them down and it's labeled case suggestions. So.
Anyways, please follow us on our social media accounts. Facebook is the Miranda Writes Podcast. Instagram is the Miranda Writes _19. Twitter's at HEMIRNDARGHTS. Email us any case suggestions you may have. If we messed up on something and you want to correct us because we're, you know, not professionals, you can do that at themirandawrites2019@gmail.com. Check out our website. I need to go over there. I've been slacking on the website. Sorry, guys. But, go to our website. It's pretty cool. I like it. I think it's cute.
It's wonderful.
I like it. I think so too.
Good job.
Thank you. That is the Miranda Writes Podcast.com. And am I forgetting anything? Mm-mm. I don't think so. Okay. But, anyways, thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Have a nice good weekend.
Bye.